I never know how to start. I hate starting. Hi, how are you doing today? We are recording tonight. Yes, tonight. I normally record this in the morning on Monday mornings, but we've had a little change of plans and I'm recording on Monday evening. I've got the window open because it's so freaking nice outside. Here goes a car driving by. Also, you know, I have to turn my AC off whenever I record. My AC, my heat, I have to turn it off inside the house when I'm recording because it's too noisy. So we're going to try to have it this way, which is going to be just as noisy. Okay? But maybe we'll hear a bird chirp. Maybe it'll be atmospheric and it'll be really cool. Episode 17. Let's get right into it. I'm going to start off tonight with the drink of the week. That's right, because it's so damn good. I can't wait to talk about it. Tonight, I am sipping on Curious Elixirs number 4. It is so good. I'm having it chilled in a wine glass. And this is a 0% alcohol cocktail for adults. Why is it for adults? Because it has adaptogenic herbs in it. It has holy basil, also known as tulsi, which is kind of gives you like a little bit of a buzz. It's like used for focus and energy. It's like 1,000 years old, so it's totally cool. And this one, number 4, has like blood orange. It's slightly fizzy. It honestly tastes amazing. It's a little bitter. That's what makes it adult, you know? It's got complex flavor profiles. So it's not like, you know, kids don't want this. First of all, it has adaptogens in it, so it's not suitable for kids anyway. But if it didn't, kids wouldn't like the taste. Because this is an adult drink. It's very mature, very complex. And that's what makes it like a cocktail. Because it's got all these different, you know, shits in it that are gonna really intrigue you. So I'll share the info for that in the episode notes for today. Because you definitely want to try this. Number 4 is one of my top favorites of the Curious Elixirs. Oh, so good. And it's nice and cold. And it looks beautiful too. I posted it on my Instagram story tonight, on the show's Instagram story. So once again, if you're not following Diaries of a Pretender on Instagram, you're missing out on even more quality content. Get over there and follow that page, okay? So you can see the beautiful tangerine glow of this gorgeous non-alcoholic cocktail in a wine glass in front of my window. All right, so a lot has happened since I spoke with you last. I know last episode I said I was going to have a guest, and I'm not going to have a guest today. And let me explain, because I am not a liar. You may think I'm a liar, but I am not a liar. And I'm very adamant about this aspect of myself, and I always have been. I do not lie. I don't even think to lie. So that sounded like a lie. I realized when I said it sounded like a lie, but it's not. I never lie. I changed my mind. Okay, I was going to have a guest, then some things were going on with that person that, you know, I didn't feel like getting involved in their life and asking them to come do this for free at that particular moment in time. And then I also thought, I'm just not going to do a guest because it's not the right time for me to do a guest. I'm flying solo for episode 17. I knew it in my heart. I don't even know why I said it last week. And I probably could have just smoothed that over and not even mentioned it. But if you're listening to this in, you know, chronological order and you just finished episode 16, I want to address it straight away. We're not having a damn guest today. And that, again, it's not because I lied. It's because I changed my mind, and I'm allowed to change my mind. I'm a 21st century woman, and I'm allowed to change my mind. Okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way, something else that happened since I spoke with you last, we've had a lot of shootings, unfortunately. I hate that I have to, you know, discuss this today, but it is something that has been ongoing. And, you know, since I did talk about being afraid whenever I go back to the movies that someone's going to shoot up the place, you know, that's real. And it just continues to happen. And it's such a shame. Like, we just started getting every... There's a car driving by. Sorry. It's such a shame. Okay, they're still driving by. Okay, it's such a shame that, like, we're finally gonna, like, close up the pandemic and, like, we're gonna be able to travel again and we're gonna be able to go to a restaurant. My aunt is having a birthday party for her kid next weekend and she told me about it and I was like, oh my God, I can go. I don't have to just immediately be like, oh, have fun, wish I could come. Like, I could go, actually. More on that in a bit. But as far as the shootings, I just feel the need to really just express this publicly. I used to be a person who liked guns. I'm from the South. I always grew up with guns as a recreational activity. So, like, every year on Thanksgiving, whenever we went to my grandparents' house, we would go outside after we finished eating. All the grandkids would go outside, me and my cousins with my grandpa, and our parents would come. You know, everyone would go outside. We would put up like some pie tins on the trees, and we would get out a bunch of guns and we would just like do a target practice. And it was a lot of fun. And it was like our tradition. We always looked forward to it every year. Then as we got older and my cousins got old enough to like, you know, have their own guns, we would shoot my grandpa's guns. Then my uncle would bring one sometimes. But then once my cousins got old enough to buy their own guns, they would started buying rifles and then they would bring their rifles and we would shoot them on Thanksgiving. And that was a lot of fun, you know, like learning how to shoot different rifles, you know, and like trying out different guns and who can hit the target the best. And like, you know, it's like a competition. And then, my dad gave me a pistol whenever I was in my, I guess, mid-20s. He gave me this 22 Magnum pistol. And it's like, it's kind of a cool gun. And I never really liked to shoot it much because it's super, super loud. Like extraordinarily loud, like you wouldn't even believe. But like, that's something that I used to do with my dad too. My dad and I would go down to the farm and like shoot. He had a shotgun that we would go shoot and it kicked me so hard. It blew my, hit my shoulder and blew me backwards, you know, and that was a thrill to me as a girl and as an adolescent woman. And as just a Southern gal, you know, like, especially in the South, gun culture is everywhere. And for me, I didn't see a lot of guns like lying around the house necessarily. It was like a special occasion, like, you know, something to do whenever the weather was nice and everybody was getting together and it's just something to do. So I always had the feeling that, you know, there's nothing wrong with responsible gun ownership. And I still feel that way. And a lot of people, if you try to take away their guns, it's like a very touchy issue, which I understand. And it's obvious to everyone that I am a left-leaning Democrat, or it should be at least, you know, I don't talk politics on this podcast, but I've always felt like I'm in this position where I'm not allowed, or like it doesn't really align with the rest of my beliefs to have guns. However, I have always, you know, defended gun ownership for responsible gun owners because of the way I grew up. Now, all that to say, I've changed my mind. And there's nothing I like about guns anymore. I don't even want to shoot my guns anymore. I can't even enjoy that anymore. It's not fun to me, or it wouldn't be fun to me now. I haven't shot in a long time. But it's not fun anymore. I mean, how could it be? How could you continue to defend, you know, this thing that continues to be abused and results in a lot of people's deaths, accidental deaths at home? In addition to mass shootings, it's a huge, huge problem. So I just wanted to come out and say, I'm not a gun person anymore. I don't want them. I don't want them in my business. Don't invite me to go shoot. No one did, but I'm just putting it out there. Like, I've officially changed my mind. I'm just like completely disgusted by what's going on in this country right now. And responsible gun owners, it doesn't matter anymore. We've got to reduce the number of guns that we have in circulation in this country. And whatever I can do to contribute to that, I'm willing to do. Because guns are not more important than, you know, our peace of mind that we can go out in public and go see a movie without being murdered. You know, it's like, it's totally crazy. I hope that, like, somebody does something, like the lawmakers in America. I hope we can get something done about this. Hopefully we will, because it's getting crazy. Anyway, I don't want to talk anymore about that. I just wanted to publicly declare that I have officially disowned gun culture. And I don't care who knows it. In other news, I'm reading a book of short stories by Raymond Carver. And I read one of his compilations of short stories a couple years ago. And I thought it was really interesting, his stories at the time. They're about like really contained stories about couples. And I don't know when they're supposed to, I guess it's not always about couples, but it seems like it is. I guess they're not really like time period specific, but they always feel like it's in the 1950s and 1950s America specifically. And it's a very interesting like slice of life time period to peer into as a reader, because it's so different from, you know, anything that we're accustomed to today. And also because culture was so different in the way of even what was acceptable to write about. It's like, it's fascinating to me. Because Raymond Carver should be canceled. But maybe nobody's reading his stories and no one cares. But I mean, if you're canceling people and you're canceling everyone, you've got to cancel him too, because all of his stories are about, like, the first story in the book is titled Fat, F-A-T, Fat. And it's just about, like, this lady, she works at a diner, and she just is talking about this guy who came in and she served him and he was super fat. And she's like, he was the fattest person I've ever seen. You know, and then she just goes on and on about how fat he was and everything he ate. And the story's only like 8 pages long, and I really don't know what it means at all, but it's quite interesting. Then there's another story where like the man is like, his wife works at a diner. I guess Raymond Carver was really into the diner scene and women working at diners. But there's like a story where this woman works in a 24-hour diner, and her husband goes out and gets drunk, and they leave their kids at home alone, and he comes into the diner to go see her at work after he's been out drinking. He wants a cup of coffee, and he overhears these dudes next to him sitting at the bar talking about his wife, and they're like, it's such a gross conversation. But I think this is like how we got where we are today with like the views that traditionally men have held about women and the way they feel it's acceptable to talk about women. Because in the story, these two men are sitting there and the one guy says to the other one, "Hey, look at the ass on her." And the other guy's like, "Oh, not for me. She's pretty fat. Not into that." And then the other guy's like, "Yeah, well, some dudes like fat chicks." And he's like, "Not me." And then the guy is like sitting there and he overhears it. And then he gets really embarrassed and he leaves. So then his wife comes home. And the next day he's like, "Look, I think you need to lose some weight." And she's like, "What? You've never said anything about this before. Why are you bringing this up now?" And he's like, "Just, I hate to say this to you, but you've got to lose some weight. Like, you're not looking good." And she's like, "Well, okay, I guess I can, but it's going to be really hard." Because, again, this is like the 1950s or something. And, like, they, I guess, didn't understand, like, nutrition. So she's like, "Well, I'll try, but it's going to be really hard." And he's like, "Well, okay, let's go over some diets." And they go, like, there's a protein diet, but they can't afford the steak she would have to eat to go on the protein diet. And then he's like, "Okay, what about the grapefruit juice diet?" And she's like, "I don't like grapefruit juice." And he's like, "Okay, what about..." Oh, there's a car driving by. And then he's like, "What about the vegetable diet?" And she's like, "I don't eat vegetables." And he's like, "Well, fuck. Okay. Well, you're just going to have to not eat then." And she's like, "Okay, I'll do it." So she just quits eating because her husband tells her she's fat because he overheard some men talking about how fat she was and how they didn't like her ass because she was too fat. And then, then she quits eating and she starts losing weight. And then he comes in and he sees her eating bacon and eggs and he's like, "Oh, what the fuck are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm so sorry. I got hungry. I won't do it again." And she quits eating again. And then he goes and buys a scale and he makes her get on the scale every day. And he starts writing down her weight and keeping track of it. Like, "Okay, you're doing good. Just keep not eating." So then she's like, "My coworker said that I look really pale and sick and like maybe I should start eating again." And he's like, "No, no, you don't listen to your coworkers. They're not your husband." That's actually the title of the story. "They're not your husband." And she's like, "Okay, you're right." And then she eventually gets where she doesn't have any energy and she just lays in bed all the time. And then she goes to work and then she comes back and lays in bed. But she loses the weight, so he's happy. And then he goes out and gets drunk again, leaves the kids home alone. And then he goes back to the diner to get a cup of coffee and, you know, check out what's being said about his wife at the diner now that she's lost some weight. And he's acting like a real fucking weirdo. And he looks over at the guy next to him and he's like, "Hey, what do you think about her, huh?" And the guy just ignores him. And he's like, "What the fuck's wrong with you?" And he just keeps reading the newspaper. And then this other waitress comes over and the guy's like, "Hey, so what's up with your friend? She's pretty cute, huh?" And she's like, "Sir, do you need something?" And then she goes back over to the woman and she's like, "Who's this joker sitting at the bar? He's so weird." And then he just does this insane, creepy smile. And then everyone just starts looking at him. And then the woman's like, "Oh, that's my husband." And that's the end of the story. So, yeah, like not a female empowerment piece for sure. But I mean, interesting piece of writing in the way that he describes all of this. And I think he's definitely got some interesting ideas about things and definitely glad it's not acceptable to do that anymore. I would straight up, I mean, there's no way in hell I would just quit eating. Even, I don't care if it was the 1950s. I would be like, excuse me, what about you? You're not a fucking Adonis yourself, are you? When you start hitting the dumbbells and, you know, when I see an ab on your stomach, then I'll do something as well. But you lead the charge, sir. You're the man in this relationship. Excuse me, I need to take a sip of my very complex adult mocktail. Sorry, that was obnoxious. Okay. Anyway, I was just thinking about that and thinking like, wow, this is crazy. And probably if we canceled all the writers and all the artists who we could cancel based on their weird ideas about things that haven't aged well, pretty much every writer ever throughout history and present day would be canceled except Michelle Obama. So, yeah, Michelle Obama, you're good to go. Everyone else, you might want to prepare for the inevitable. Okay, this week's movie recommendation, movie of the week, is... American Movie. Now, this is not a new movie. This movie is from 1999, and it's a documentary about a man who lives in Wisconsin, and he is trying to make a movie. That's it. But this documentary is so fucking interesting. I watched it last night, and it made me so happy. It was so fascinating. And I love this guy who the documentary is about. His name is Mark Borchardt. And it was so cool. They're like heavy metal dudes. He and this other guy who helps him like make his movies, they're like kind of heavy metal dudes that really all they like to do is drink beer and drink vodka and party and hang out in the cemetery. And they're just like super wacky dudes. However, this guy, Mark, who is trying to make a movie, he's such an interesting guy. And he's just like relentless with his passion about what he wants to do. And he's actually very knowledgeable about filmmaking. And they're shooting everything on 16 millimeter film. I mean, that in and of itself takes like so many different skills to like expose the film properly and to edit the thing. And like you see them in the editing bay and they have like all these spools of film like pulled out all over the room and they're cutting it with like, you know, scissors, like taping the scenes together physically, like the little frames. Then like there's one part they're getting, he finally is like almost getting the movie finished and he realized that they left out like three frames and he's like, we gotta go back and find these three frames. And it's like, it's so fascinating. But the thing about this guy is that he is really sidelined by his drinking and he doesn't have any competent people around him to help him make the movie. He has like several people that help him and that are really dedicated friends, but he's basically all on his own out here in Wisconsin trying to make this short film. He's trying to make a 35-minute short film. And I'm telling you, if you've ever wanted to do anything with your life that people told you you couldn't do, you should see this movie. Because I found it, like, not even just making films, but, well, in this instance, making films. They interview his family and his brothers, and they're like, yeah, well, he really needs to just go work at the factory because he sucks at making movies. And I was like, excuse you. I mean, that shit pisses me off that people like who are totally uninspired and like you choose to live your life one way and you choose to work at a factory. You choose to do whatever you want to do. You know, like nobody's knocking you for that. What right do you have to like just shit on somebody's dream? Like to make somebody who has a dream feel bad or like they interview them and they're like, do you think he'll ever finish a movie? And like his mom is like, no, probably not. And then his brother's like, his movies aren't even good. You know, like they're just, ugh, it's just terrible. Like, but again, everybody that strikes out to go do something like this and they're not from like a well-connected dynasty of people who are in the industry. I think a lot of people are up against this. A lot of people face this where you're like in a part of the world or a part of America where you're not, you can't just easily tap into an infrastructure of film people or like even facilities or equipment or actors or whatever it is. And you're just trying to do it however you can. That is extremely daunting. But that doesn't mean that everybody who tries to do it in that manner is a talentless hack who just has a stupid dream and you need to just kick them and diminish their dream and try to smash them down until they're so defeated that they give up and go work at a factory. I can't stand that. People should just, why can't everybody just be encouraging and be nice and be compassionate and be understanding of the way other people want to live their lives? I think there would be so many more success stories in the world if everybody was more supportive of everybody else. Anyway, enough on my soapbox about that. The movie is really, really highly entertaining. Like, laugh out loud funny. Also will make you want to cry. Also, like, so many surprising characters in the movie, too. And a bit of a twist ending, I must say, as well. So I really would like you all to watch this movie, especially if you're interested in filmmaking or you identify with the story I just told. You're going to like it even more. So you can rent this movie on Amazon Prime for $3, and it's worth the $3. And if you've ever made art, like I can already hear some groans of like, oh, I'm not paying to rent a movie. I can watch 500,000 piece of shit movies on Netflix. Yeah, okay. But if you've ever made a piece of art and you've ever made something and put your blood, sweat, and tears into it for years upon years of your life, you will be willing to pay $3 to view someone else's art and, you know, feel good about it. I rented the movie for $3 and felt great about it. So don't be so cheap, guys. I had something else I was going to say about that, and it's, oh, okay. Okay. So now that I've said all that, this movie, again, it's called American Movie, but it's a documentary. This movie was made, the director was not the guy who the movie is about. It's not the guy who's the subject of the movie. The subject of the movie is this guy named Mark. The director of the documentary American Movie is a guy named Chris Smith. And that guy actually went on to produce a bunch of well-known documentary series, including the Tiger King documentary series, and a bunch of other ones too. But I just remember seeing like the Tiger King thing and I was like, holy shit, it's the same guy. That's crazy. So obviously that guy did go on to be successful, and the film American Movie won the grand jury prize at Sundance in 1999 and then was bought by Sony Picture Classics for $1 million. Now, meanwhile, Mark, who is the subject of the documentary, who's trying to make his own movie and trying to make money, he's in debt like the whole movie. He's like talking about all his bills and like everything he owes. He's just trying to, his goal is to sell like 3,000 copies of his short film for $14.95 each. And I don't know if he actually ended up selling that many or not. But I looked Mark up after I watched the movie, and I hate to spoil this for you if you're going to watch it, but he actually never finished any of his features. He had at least two feature-length films that he was planning on making, and he never finished them. And that just, like, ruined it for me and made me so sad because, I mean, I guess it happens all the time. There's people who are really talented and really ambitious, and the stars just don't align. But I kind of feel like maybe his, you know, he had some things going on in his personal life that probably dragged him down. But if you don't look at that and you just look at what happened in the context of American movie, it's a very inspiring tale that made me literally, after I watched it, I got up, I walked over to the window, took a look at the supermoon, which looked amazing. And then I was like, I'm excited to go make a movie now. I want to like go home and start editing my documentaries that I'm working on and just keep making stuff. I felt so invigorated. So, you know, the same might happen for you too. I don't know. Okay. I meant to talk about this earlier, but things kind of got away from me there and I just went in 500 different directions. I did get the COVID vaccine. I got my first shot of the Moderna COVID vaccine. I think it's been almost 2 weeks ago now that I got the shot, and I wanted to talk about my experience. So first of all, I'm not eligible to get the vaccine right now, because it's like old people and like certain types of workers and stuff like that, and I just wasn't eligible. Biden did say that the vaccine would be available to all adults by May 1st, but the state that I'm in does not currently have a plan to actually make that happen. So I'm not sure if it will even be available on May 1st. So this was one of those situations where there was a pharmacist who had extra doses that were gonna go bad or be just thrown away if she couldn't find arms to put them into. So I got the call. Hey, do you want to go get a COVID vaccine real quick right now in like the next 5 minutes? I was like, yeah, I'll go. Let's go. Yeah. What, are you gonna come pick me up? Let's go. So hopped in the car, went to go get this vaccine, and she showed us the vial and everything. She was like, this is the Moderna vaccine, this is blah, blah. I got the little card and everything showing that I've had the first shot. But because I have an allergy to certain antibiotics, I had to wait 30 minutes before I could leave after I got the shot to make sure I didn't fall out and die from an anaphylactic shock or whatever. So everything was cool. It didn't even hurt when I got the shot. And then I went home and my arm, within like a couple of hours, my arm was hurting, like big time hurting. And, I texted my aunt who we went together to get the shot, and I was like, does your arm hurt? And she was like, yeah. I was like, why did nobody tell me about this? So I've talked to some people who said their arm hurt, but actually 95% of, I guess it's more like 99% of people I've asked have said that they got the shot and their arm never hurt. So I don't know what exactly is going on with my body, but we have chosen the narrative that our bodies are so healthy and had such a great immune response to the shot that our arm just hurt really bad. So congratulations. If you get the shot and your arm hurts really bad, you can use that same story to tell yourself that it's all good. But after about 24 hours, that was gone. And then I was like, so excited. I felt like I can go out in the world again. I can go out in the world and live my life and not worry so much. I still wear a mask, but yeah, I'm going to go get the second shot in a couple more weeks, and we're on our way, folks. We're on our way. So yeah. Oh, another car's going by. Jeez. These people need to go home and stay there. I mean, it's 8 p.m. Like, what are you doing? Early to bed, early to rise. Guys, didn't you know that saying? So yeah, something else that I got up to recently, I started a peel and stick wallpaper project, and it's gone horribly awry, and I feel completely dejected and basically a complete failure. I don't know how to do anything. I'm completely inept and stupid, and I suck at home improvement projects, and I should never do one. I thought this would be easy. I thought it would be very simple. It's peel and stick. Those are the two steps. Peel and stick. I didn't look up any tutorials. The instructions that I got were like in broken English that didn't, like, they weren't that specific. But I thought, this is simple. I'm just going to start and see where this takes me. But apparently what I figured out is if you don't have your first strip completely straight and lined up, then the rest of your strips are not ever going to fit onto your situation that you're doing on the wall. So mine have hella bubbles all under the paper and like random just like cuts and strips, and things are like hanging down. Some pieces are not sticking. But the miraculous thing is, I did this because I'm trying to like improve my home office taping area. So when I tape auditions or when I film like YouTube videos or whatever I need to do in here, that the wall will look the way I want it to look, because I don't like the color that the wall is, and I don't want to paint it because I suck at painting. So the miraculous thing is that it actually looks decent on... It actually looks decent on camera. So I'm still going to have to like redo it to some degree, and I've already wasted two rolls. And I've got one roll left, and then I guess I'll have to order some more rolls. But it's just honestly such a huge embarrassment. And then I taped an audition yesterday, and it was like, it looks so bad. It looks insane. Like, where are you? You've got like brown walls and then white ripples and bubbles, and like, what's happening? It's like a patchwork quilt back there. It doesn't even look like the wall. So then like I have to do a slate on the end where I say like my name and my height, my current location, some other information. So I was just like, I better just head this off at the pass and just, you know, go with it instead of pretending that it's not happening. So I was like, I'm Raiden Greer, I'm 5'6". And as you can see right here, I embarked on a peel and stick wallpaper project that I actually didn't know what I was doing. So I'm sorry. You know, it's better to just address things head on. And, you know, if they don't like that, then oh well. Because that's how I roll. Yeah. Okay, the last thing that I wanted to talk about was the guy that had shrimp tails and his Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Do you know about this? Because I don't always keep up with like online phenomena as they occur. But this one, I have like a secret Twitter account that I just use to read like I follow a lot of NBA players, and basically that's it. I just use it to follow NBA players. But somehow I was on there just like scrolling, and then I had like a recommendation that I look at this guy's thread about getting shrimp tails in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And I was like, excuse me, what the hell is this? Oh, this is my absolutely wild. I haven't done an absolutely wild. Okay. Absolutely wild. This guy, he's like a comedian or like a comic writer for TV. So at first I was like, okay, he definitely made this up to get followers. And then I started looking into it further, and there's actually no way he made it up. I'm convinced that this man opened a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal and fucking cinnamon sugar coated shrimp tails fell out the damn box. So basically that's what happened. And then he took a picture of it and posted it on Twitter and was like, he tagged Cinnamon Toast Crunch and he was like, excuse me, why do I have shrimp tails in my cereal? And like they weren't answering. So then he tagged like the actual manufacturer, General Mills account. And he was like, guys, I need an answer. Why are there shrimp tails in my damn Cinnamon Toast Crunch? And then like from that moment forward, they just like immediately started being so rude to this guy about the cereal. And they were like, hi, it appears after we've taken a closer look at the image that these are actually just clumps of cinnamon and sugar that didn't come out right in the manufacturing process. Thanks. And he was like, no. So he took a picture then of the shrimp tails in his hand and posted that picture on Twitter. And he was like, quit acting like I'm crazy. These are goddamn shrimp tails. I'm sitting here with them in my hand. Like, what are you talking about? And then they started doing a bunch of really weird stuff where they were like, okay, you need to put the shrimp tails and the whole box into a FedEx envelope. And then we need you to stay home for a 3-hour window so we can send someone to come pick it up. And he was like, no, I'm not doing that. You already trying to make it seem like I'm lying. You're trying to gaslight me about the shrimp tails. And I'm not into this. I don't like the way you're handling this. So no, I'm not going to give you a 3-hour window. And they're like, okay, in that case, if you will not return the items so we can do testing on them, we need you to take the shrimp tails to your local police station. And he was like, absolutely not. I'm not going to take this shit up to the police station and walk in and yell, here are the shrimp tails General Mills wanted. Like it's the smoking gun in a murder case. And oh my God, I was just laughing my ass off reading this. You've got to go read it if you want to like get involved in the whole story verbatim, because obviously I'm not telling it exactly like that guy did. So if you want to go read just his pure comedy gold about this shrimp thing, you need to go on Twitter. I'm going to see if I can find it again so I can tell you what his name is. Okay, I'm just going to type in shrimp tail Cinnamon Toast Crunch. It came up right away. Okay. Okay, the guy's name is Jensen Karp. Jensen, JenseKarp. Now, let me see if there's an update. Okay, there's no update since last week about this guy and the shrimp tails. Anyway, I think he finally agreed to send them one shrimp tail, and then he was going to keep one shrimp tail as evidence. But his tweets about it are really funny because, like I said, he's a comedy writer, so funnier than me, of course. Yeah, go check it out. The Saga of the Shrimp Tales in the Cinnamon Toast Crunch. All right, that's going to do it for today, I think. Shout out to everybody who tuned in last week. Even though I didn't put out a new episode, we had listeners from the US, from India, Russia, Brazil, Canada, Germany, Japan. Thank you so much, guys. Like I said, please follow the show on Instagram at Diaries of a Pretender if you want to see extra content of whatever I'm talking about each week on the show. Please rate and review the show. Oh yeah, feel free to email me at podcast@raiden.me. I read all my emails and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on these important issues that we have discussed today. All right, guys, I'll speak to you soon. Thank you so much. Bye.